Today's broadcast was originally recorded on February 13th, 2025.
They could tell it's measles. You know, if it looks like measles and it smells like measles, it's measles that killed those people.
Must have been measles. I don't care what Bobby says.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
For one of the reasons.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also heard in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV. Out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. And yes, we stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-round swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Now, in our 22nd year of troublemaking and muckraking, thank you very much for joining us today for what may or may not be another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. That remains to be seen. That
your mileage may vary.
That chortle you hear there is Desiree Doyen. Hi, Des. How are you today?
Okay,
good. Well, listen, I think we could all use a bit of a smile here. Before we get to the grim stuff today, though, we got a lot to get to. We'll see how much we actually can get to, because there's also always these days breaking news, but there is some particular breaking news that I've got my eyes on in New York that I do hope to get to in a little bit today. But in response to our story on yesterday's program, just to, you know, start things off here with a smile, we did a quick story yesterday about Georgia's Republican Congressman Buddy Carter, who has introduced a bill in the U.S. House to encourage Donald Trump to begin negotiations to somehow buy Greenland. And then change its name, according to Carter's bill, to Red, White, and Blueland. Well, in response to that story, our friend and listener Casey P. writes in to Bradcast at bradblog.com to ask, why hasn't Buddy Carter introduced a bill to change the name of Greenville, Georgia, which is in the northwest part of that state, not part of his district, to Red, White, and Blueville? Good question. What kind of American is he, Casey wonders? Why don't we change the name of that football team in Wisconsin to the Red, White, and Blue Packers? And he asks, when are you going to change the name of your environmental report to the Red, White, and Blue News Report? Good question. What do you think, Des?
Well, I'd have to think about that.
Well,
one.
I think you should start thinking about it, because right now, those people who do not toe the line in favor of Donald Trump are coming up against a world of hurt, Des. And so I just want you to think about it. Just think about it today. It might be a good idea to reconsider the Green News Report. In any event, our latest, whatever we want to call it, we'll call it our GNR for now, just so it doesn't catch anybody's notice, is that's coming up later. It's chocked with, well, as usual, nothing but good news, including Donald Trump's new orders to raise prices for consumers on a whole bunch of stuff that President Biden had previously reduced. the prices of.
Making America expensive again.
There you go. And in another quick follow-up story to another one from earlier this week, Trump's attempt his attempted firing of Hampton Dellinger, who, even though it sounds like he has a totally made-up fictional spy name or something, he's actually the head of the independent U.S. Office of Special Counsel, or OSC. It's responsible for helping federal employees to avoid Hatch Act violations that limit that act limits their political activity while on the job, and perhaps more importantly, particularly in the Trump era, protecting the rights of government agency whistleblowers. Dellinger was fired earlier this week, as we discussed briefly with longtime government ethics expert Craig Holman a few days ago. You can download that excellent conversation anytime for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to those who donate to our efforts. Anyway, Dellinger was unceremoniously fired without cause and, as he argued, in violation of U.S. law. Well, he challenged that firing this week, and late last night, U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson granted Dellinger's temporary restraining order, his request for a TRO, keeping him for now, anyway, as the head of the U.S. Office of Special Counsel. A hearing on the preliminary injunction on the firing is set for later this month after the judge found Dellinger's removal from the agency that protects government whistleblowers, quote, plainly in violation of U.S. law. The court finds that there is a substantial likelihood that plaintiff will succeed on the merits, wrote Judge Jackson in her late-night ruling. The effort by the White House to terminate the special counsel without identifying any cause plainly contravenes the statute, which states, quote, the special counsel may be removed by the president only for inefficiency, neglect of duty, or malfeasance in office. Just to be clear, in this case, the Office of the Special Counsel and the special counsel here, Hampton Dellinger, that's different. That's not the the type of special counsel that is appointed to investigate a specific thing like Jack Smith or Robert Mueller, et cetera. This is actually a standing office at the DOJ, the Office of Special Counsel. The judge continued, the language expresses Congress's clear intent in the statute to ensure the independence of the special counsel and insulate his work from being buffeted by the winds of political change.
Oh, like checks and balances and stuff.
Yeah, and in this case, there this is one of those roles that where I believe they have 5-year terms, so it overlaps presidential administrations, et cetera, like the FBI director, by the way, is supposed to do that. But as long as Donald Trump keeps firing them as soon as he shows up, well, anyway, the judge continues, defendant's only response to this inarguable reading of the text is that the statute is, quote, unconstitutional. But no court has said so, she writes. And to date, the Supreme Court has taken pains to carve the OSC out of its pronouncements concerning the president's broad authority to remove certain officials who assist him in discharging his duties at will. Moreover, the reasoning underlying the decisions relied upon by defendants does not extend to the unique office and official involved in this case. So in other words, she's saying the defendant, which is the Trump administration here, is just completely wrong according to a plain reading of existing laws. A similar ruling, frankly, to what we are seeing all over the place these days when it comes to challenge after challenge against Donald Trump's unlawful activities across the board, really. So anyway, for now, Hampton Dellinger is still on the job. So that holds for now. But the outcome in another case was somewhat less encouraging in a story that broke right at the end of our program yesterday, even though now that I've had the chance to look into the story in more detail, it is not quite as troubling as it sounded last night.
Oh, good.
When just reading the headline from CNN, that headline was a federal judge lets Trump buyout plan for federal employees proceed. In fact, the judge did let the program proceed, but he did not find it to be lawful. He just found that the challengers in this case did not have standing to sue. So they didn't get to the merits of the case, whether or not this so-called buyout letter is actually lawful at all. But as CNN reports, U.S. District Judge George O'Toole, who was appointed by President Bill Clinton, said on Wednesday that federal employee unions, which brought a lawsuit on behalf of its members, are not directly impacted by the program, which offered pretty much all federal employees, about 2 million of them, the opportunity to accept something being called a deferred resignation. If accepted, those workers would, in most cases, be allowed to not work for about 8 months before then receiving a payment for early retirement, even though Congress has not actually appropriated funding for any of this, making it all unlawful, according to advocates who say that you can't make a promise to a federal worker to pay them something that has not actually been allocated yet by Congress. And that's also according to agency officials who have been warning employees to be very careful about taking this deal that they were sent, that all of them were sent via email, and that they may never actually get paid for. The memo sent to federal workers was titled Fork in the Road. That's the very same subject line that was emailed to Twitter employees back in 2022 before its then new owner, Elon Musk, ended up firing more than like two-thirds of the workforce there. The federal program was challenged by the American Federation of Government Employees, or AFGE, whose political director joined us on the program about 2 weeks ago. They partnered with several other unions to argue that the program was unlawful and harmed them because it would divert resources to address, quote, the tidal wave of inquiries and counseling requests that the so-called Fork Directive has caused. And I guess we were one of those people to whom they had to divert resources to explain that when we had had their political director on the show. But Judge O'Toole determined that the unions themselves were not directly harmed by the program. Therefore, they didn't have legal standing to sue to stop it. Now, while before that decision, while the challenge was still ongoing, the judge had paused the end date by which government workers were given to accept the offer or not, with the implicit threat that many of them were likely to be fired if they didn't take this offer. They were likely to be fired instead thereafter. The deferred resignation offer is apparently a key piece of the Trump administration's efforts to shrink the size of the federal government. Not specifically targeting, really any particular people or jobs or programs, just trying to get rid of as many people as they possibly can.
Unless they're in the Defense Department.
They get to stay.
Yeah.
For now. We'll
and they
see.
Get all those contracts.
Unless they're a general who doesn't, you know, salute enough to Donald
exactly.
Trump. About 75,000 workers have reportedly accepted that package. And as of the judge ruling on Wednesday, the administration, when he lifted his pause on that date, as of then, the administration has now reportedly begun widespread layoffs across the federal government among those who remain or did not take that offer. Not targeted layoffs, as I say, they're just apparently getting rid of anybody that they can. Because fewer people somehow, no matter who those people are, no matter how much subject matter expertise they may have or institutional knowledge they may have, well, fewer is better than more. Fewer people makes better government somehow, as the Trump-Musk Republican Party theory seems to go right now.
Fewer people, though, also means fewer services.
Correct.
And degraded services.
Correct.
So.
Correct. But
in other words, you shouldn't be getting anything back in exchange for the tax dollars that you send.
Right. But for so long, Republicans, Fox News have been saying, oh, the government is bloated, big government. We need to make smaller government. Anything we do to make government smaller is somehow better. Well, that court ruling on Wednesday has been one of the very few victories so far for the Trump administration in court, in the federal courts, as they have to date really been losing one after another of the dozens of challenges that have come before federal judges to what the Trump administration is trying to do. This afternoon, for example, another loss for the Trump administration as a federal judge has paused for now Trump's unspeakably cruel executive order mandating big government restrictions on gender-affirming health care for transgender youth. They pretend, of course, that big government is bad, and yet they are in favor of the biggest of governments when it comes to restricting personal freedoms and what Americans may or may not be do with their own health care.
And with their children's health care.
They prefer that the big government come in and take those personal decisions away from their parents and their doctors. Personal decisions that, by the way, do not affect anyone else. Take that away from doctors and parents. They prefer the government, specifically in the case of the executive order that Donald Trump signed, the government, Donald Trump specifically, be the one who decides what medical care Americans may or may not receive. Let's leave it up to Donald Trump when it comes to medical decisions, shall we? That order, in any event, from Donald Trump is now apparently on hold as the case is set to receive more hearings in the days ahead. But on the matter of health care and the role that government should or should not play in it, when especially when personal health care decisions actually do affect the health of everyone else, well, health officials confirmed on Tuesday this week that now two dozen people have been identified with measles in Gaines County, Texas. That's Desi's home state. Do you know Gaines County?
Not very well, but I think it's on the border with New Mexico or something.
It's in West Texas.
Okay.
You're right. It has one of the highest rates of vaccine exemptions in the entire state. All of the confirmed measles cases in the county, more than two dozen people, are in children, and all of them involve unvaccinated residents. Nine patients now have been hospitalized there in Gaines County. Dr. Amesh Adalja, an infectious disease physician and senior scholar at Johns Hopkins, told CBS News on Wednesday, quote, "It is troubling because this was completely preventable." He said, "What we are seeing is one of the places in Texas, it has the lowest vaccination rates, the highest school exemption rates from measles vaccination, now having a measles outbreak, including hospitalizations of individuals who have been infected with measles." Adalja said that this should act as a reminder that measles is still a risk when proper precautions are not taken. While most people with symptoms of measles improve, in fact, one in five unvaccinated people will be hospitalized from measles. One in five. And one out of every 1,000 will develop brain swelling from measles that can lead to brain damage. And up to three of every 1,000 people who get this almost fully preventable disease, measles, will actually die. Says the doctor, quote, "It's the most contagious infectious disease known to humans, measles." I didn't realize that. He says, "And when we start to see measles outbreak, that's a sign that there is a chink in the armor of vaccination, and the fact that it's preventable, I think, is what people should understand. This does not have to happen if we can get vaccination rates back to high levels again." Indeed, while measles infections were widespread years ago, decades ago, with hundreds of thousands of cases a year up until the development of the measles vaccine more than 50 years ago, cases then almost immediately plummeted after this vaccine became available, almost plummeted. With the widespread use of the measles, mumps, and rubella, or MMR, vaccine, infections went down to pretty much zero. In the 70s, across the nation for many years. By the turn of the century, there was almost none, and they have now only begun to rise again in recent years after burgeoning vaccine skepticism. Quote, if somebody is fully vaccinated against measles and has a normal immune system, they do not need to worry about measles, said Adalja. You're not going to be at risk for contracting measles because the vaccine is very, very effective. In fact, he notes one dose of MMR vaccine, which protects against measles, mumps, and rubella, is 93% effective against measles, and the recommended two dose is 97% effective, according to research. Studies have shown the MMR vaccine, first introduced in 1971, may be given safely and effectively in combination with other vaccines as well. Quote, it's those individuals who are not vaccinated or the parents who choose not to get them vaccinated who are the problem here, according to Adalja. Nationwide, at least 10 states have seen vaccination rates fall in recent years, jeopardizing the country's herd immunity from widespread outbreaks. Like Texas, some Florida schools, such as an elementary school in Broward County last year, have seen measles outbreaks. The vaccination rate for Florida kindergartners has now fallen to 88%, according to the CDC. That is the lowest in decades, and children are paying the price for that. Dr. Jeffrey Goldhagen, a pediatrician and professor at the University of Florida, said, quote, 90% is nowhere near good enough for vaccination rate. That coverage rate will allow for the spread of vaccine-preventable diseases. He said if vaccination rates continue to dip, the U.S. could see, quote, increased numbers of children infected. It means epidemics of measles. We are at great risk for reemergence of polio in this country, he said. Well, with all of that in mind, on a related note, longtime well-known vaccine skeptic Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was confirmed by Republicans in the U.S. Senate on Thursday as the nation's next Secretary of Health and Human Services, giving him oversight of the nation's sprawling healthcare infrastructure and health infrastructure, including the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, the NIH, and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, among other things. Yes, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is now overseeing all of that. All Democrats voted against him on Thursday. Just one Republican, former Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who suffered from polio himself as a child. Mitch McConnell was the only Republican to vote against RFK Jr. He was confirmed with a vote of 52-48. Now, Kennedy is not a physician. He's not an epidemiologist. He's not a virologist, nor does he have any medical training whatsoever of any sort.
And he has also never run a really large organization, much less a nationally important federal agency.
A lot of nationally important federal agencies,
yes,
actually.
Under that umbrella, yeah. Yes.
But among his accomplishments in the field, nonetheless, is a 2019 visit to Samoa, sponsored by a Samoan anti-vax influencer, according to a 2021 blog post by Kennedy himself, after which vaccination rates in Samoa plummeted in the island nation, followed by a mass measles outbreak that ended up killing 83 people there, mostly children under 5 years of age, that among a population of just 200,000 people. Quote, we don't know what was killing them, Kennedy said during his one of his tense U.S. Senate confirmation hearings late last month, suggesting that the cause of the 83 deaths was actually unclear. Who knows? Who knows what did it? Was it measles? Nobody knows. Well, Samoa's current top health official, apparently he knows, he denounced Kennedy's statement on Monday during the hearing as a, quote, complete lie. He said it's a total fabrication. This is Samoa Director General of Health, Dr. Alec Ekaroma. He told the AP about Kennedy's comments. It was a complete lie, a total fabrication. They know that, in fact, it was measles that killed those 83 people. During his testimony, Bobby claimed that his trip to Samoa had, quote, nothing to do with vaccines. He said, quote, I went there to introduce a medical informatics system that would digitalize records in Samoa and make health delivery much more efficient. Samoa's chief physician, Dr. Ekaroma, rejected that assertion, referring to social media posts by anti-vaccine advocates who posed for photos with Kennedy during the trip. One later wrote on the blog of Kennedy's nonprofit Children's Health Defense, which has decried MMR vaccines as being unsafe, that during the outbreak, he received advice from people assembled by Kennedy encouraging the alternative treatments that he was supplying to Samoan families. My words had nothing to do with vaccine uptake in Samoa or with the 2019 epidemic, Kennedy insisted in his written responses to senators during the confirmation process, but Kennedy emboldened anti-vaccine contacts in Samoa, says Dr. Ekaroma, and the epidemic was fueled by disinformation in social media posts in the island nation and abroad. A Samoan nurse who worked on the vaccination campaign to try to get out of this mess told the AP in 2023 that anti-vaccine campaigners, quote, got louder after Kennedy's visit. I feel like they felt they had the support of Kennedy, she said. A vaccination campaign resumed in 2019, and measles vaccines are now compulsory for Samoan children. So who knows? Maybe Bobby Kennedy did Samoa a favor. Sure, he ended up killing 83 people, but now at least it's compulsory. Prior to his confirmation by Republicans on Thursday, Dr. Ekaroma said that if Kennedy is confirmed as the top U.S. health expert, it would be, quote, a danger to us, a danger to everyone, he warned. In his new role as Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kennedy now controls, by and large, U.S. funding for vaccination initiatives and could make affordable vaccines harder for small nations like Samoa to access. Quote, if he's going to be appointed, Ekaroma said last week, then we will have to actually discuss around the Pacific as to how we're going to try to neutralize his influence in the region. Yeah, well, imagine how we feel about it, Doc.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it really might be a good time to check with your friends and family and make sure that they are up to date on their vaccines, because it really is unclear, sad to say, about how many vaccines may remain available in coming days, months, and weeks and years.
Nonetheless, apparently Republicans in the U.S. Senate, they no longer mind being misled or lied to, even though Kennedy is... Well, he claims one thing. The people of Samoa seem to claim another. But the Republicans seem fine with that, being lied to, even in a Senate confirmation hearing. Obviously, they don't care about people who lie to them because they still support the most spectacularly successful liar in world history, frankly, Donald Trump. But it is interesting that only Mitch McConnell, who will not be running for another term in the Senate, that only he was willing to vote against Kennedy, and he was also the only vote against Tulsi Gabbard, another former Democrat and another spectacularly unqualified appointment by Donald Trump. She was confirmed on Wednesday to be the Director of National Intelligence, despite having zero experience in the field of intelligence, and has actually repeatedly spread out and out Russian disinformation propaganda on all matter of things over the years. Though back in 2018, I guess we need to give her some credit here. After Trump was standing by Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, just after he was accused of approving the murder of dissident Washington Post journalist and American resident Jamal Khashoggi. Well, back then, Tulsi Gabbard had the courage to tweet to Donald Trump in response at the time, quote, "Hey, real Donald Trump, being Saudi Arabia's bitch is not America first." Well, who's Donald Trump's bitch now, Tulsi? Best of luck in your new role as we all try to figure out how to neutralize your influence in everyone's region. If Republicans, by the way, were willing to confirm the dangerously unqualified Kennedy, the dangerously unqualified Gabbard, I suspect at this point they will have no problem confirming the equally unqualified, arguably disqualified, Trump loyalist and lackey and MAGA merchandiser Kash Patel in the days ahead to lead the FBI as its new director, because why not? Qualifications do not matter anymore. You know, just kissing up to Donald Trump, and for the rest of us, just survival. I wish us all luck. But by the way, before Patel even gets to the FBI to corrupt and weaponize that institution, well, the Department of Justice, which oversees the FBI, is already I don't even know how to describe it. This afternoon, eating itself alive, it seems, in service to Donald Trump's corruption, even as career officials are now bravely at least trying to stand up, and they are refusing orders today, as described in an extraordinary story breaking late this afternoon out of New York and D.C., as reported by New York Times late on Thursday. And boy, this story is a humdinger already. That story is next on the broadcast. And later, Desi Doyen's Red, White, and Blue News Report. All of that still ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
To you, New York.
Apparently, no. Apparently, it is not up to you, New York. Not anymore. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right. This is just amazing what is going on late this week in New York. This story is still breaking, still trying to make sense of it. But what has happened already is kind of just gobsmacking. So earlier in the week, you may recall, we reported that Donald Trump and his personal defense attorney, who he has now named as acting deputy attorney general at the Department of Justice, Emile Beauvais, think that's how you pronounce it, had ordered federal criminal charges that had been filed against New York's Democrat-ish mayor, Eric Adams, to be dropped. This indictment was filed last year. He was indicted on 5 counts, including bribery, fraud, soliciting illegal foreign campaign donations from Turkish interests. He was getting free plane rides, hotel rooms, luxury hotel stays all around the world, paid for by Turkey. And it stems from an investigation that began back in 2021 during the Biden administration. And it appears, from what everybody seems to say about it, to have the mayor, Mayor Eric Adams in New York, pretty much dead to rights. Nonetheless, he has refused to resign, and he is even running for office again this November. And he has pleaded not guilty, of course, to all the charges. The trial was set for April, so just a few months away. But Adams had been buddying up to Trump since his reelection, since Trump's reelection last year. He flew down to meet Trump down at Mar-a-Lago, kissed the ring and so forth. And this week, orders were sent to the DOJ's office in the Southern District of New York, or SDNY, to drop all charges against Eric Adams under the claim that the charges interfered with both his ability to help Donald Trump in his immigration crackdown, because he'd be too busy, you know, fighting all of this in court, and that it, quote, improperly interfered with his reelection efforts. Jeez. He's running for office again. He can't be bothered with defending himself in a criminal case.
That argument sounds familiar.
Don't it, though? So anyway, that was all up before today. That was remarkable and unprecedented enough. A remarkable abuse of power at the Department of Justice. Really never seen before, at least not since Nixon. But while they were ordered at SDNY to drop the charges against Mayor Adams, apparently the office who brought the indictment against him had refused to do so. So the charges were not really dropped against Eric Adams. And as we go to air today, apparently they still are not dropped against him. He is still facing indictment, which is where this quickly moving story sort of picks up from the New York Times, which reports Manhattan's U.S. attorney on Thursday resigned rather than obey an order from a top Justice Department official to drop the corruption case against New York City's mayor, Eric Adams. Then, when Justice Department officials sought to transfer the case to the Public Integrity Section in Washington after the U.S. attorney in Manhattan had resigned, they sent it over to the Public Integrity Section in Washington, which oversees corruption cases. Well, at that point, the two men who led that unit also resigned rather than drop these charges. That, according to five people with knowledge of the matter. So that's three officials who resigned in a matter of hours rather than take what they saw as unlawful or corrupt orders from the Department of Justice. The resignations represent the most high-profile public resistance so far to President Trump's tightening control over the Justice Department, which, as noted, in and of itself is unprecedented, as the DOJ traditionally tries to remain independent from the president. The resignations, the Times reports, were a stunning repudiation of the administration's attempt to force the dismissal of the charges against Mayor Adams. The departures of the U.S. attorney in New York, Danielle R. Sassoon, and the officials who oversaw the Justice Department's Public Integrity Section in D.C., Kevin Driscoll and John Keller, came in rapid succession on Thursday, days after the number two at the Justice Department, Emil Bovet, Trump's personal defense attorney, had ordered Manhattan prosecutors to drop the case against Mr. Adams. This is not how any of this stuff is supposed to work. This is not how justice, blind justice, is supposed to work.
It's deeply corrupt.
The agency's justification for dropping the case, in fact, was explicitly political, the Times correctly notes. Bovet had argued earlier in the week that the charges, the indictment, and the trial would prevent Adams from fully cooperating with Trump's immigration crackdown. So it was already political. It was already corrupt. Bovet made a point of saying at the time that Washington officials had not evaluated the strength of the evidence or the legal theory behind the case. They just wanted him off the hook, whether he committed the crimes or not. They did not care. What? He committed huge corrupt crimes? We don't care. We need him to help us with immigration, with our political policy. Ms. Sassoon at SDNY, the Southern District of New York, the office, in a remarkable letter addressed to the U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi, said that Mr. Bovet's order to dismiss the case was, quote, inconsistent with my ability and duty to prosecute federal crimes without fear or favor and to advance good faith arguments before the courts. Good for her. She writes, I have always considered it my obligation to pursue justice impartially without favor to the wealthy or those who occupy important public office, or harsher treatment for the less powerful, she said. I therefore deem it necessary to the faithful discharge of my duties to raise the concerns expressed in this letter with you to request an opportunity to meet to discuss them further. Well, Beauvais has since accepted Ms. Sassoon's resignation in his own extraordinary 8-page letter late on Thursday, in which he blasted her and her handling of the case and her decision to disobey his order. He told prosecutors, prosecutors who had worked on the case against Adams were being placed on administrative leave because they, too, were unwilling to obey his order. He said that they would now be investigated themselves by the Attorney General and the Justice Department's internal investigative arm. He also told Sassoon that both bodies would evaluate her conduct in this matter. But the Times reports that the internal investigations ordered by Beauvais could also prove risky for him. Well, we'll see about that. They note that officials will likely review Beauvais' conduct as well here, and the judge overseeing the case could demand answers from Justice Department officials in Washington as to what the hell is going on. Good Lord. Beauvais made his comments to Sassoon in his letter that he believed Trump holds sway over the Justice Department, which for decades has operated at a remove from the White House, but not as Beauvais sees it. Quote, in no valid sense do you uphold the Constitution by disobeying direct orders, implementing the policy of a duly elected president, he wrote to Sassoon. I know,
oh,
I see.
Lord. No, and, honey, it doesn't work that way.
Quote, and anyone romanticizing that behavior does a disservice to the nature of this work and the public's perception of our efforts, wrote Beauvais. So let that sink in for a second. He's saying that she is not upholding the Constitution by staying true to it and to the rule of law to which, you know, she took an oath rather than following what he is admitting is a direct order from the president, who, by the way, she did not swear an oath to protect or obey. And that Sassoon is, quote, romanticizing fealty to the Constitution rather than to the president. And that is a quote, disservice to the public's perception of our efforts. Really, Mr. Beauvais? That's how you think that the public perceives this? That she's the one doing a disservice? Yikes. He wrote that he accepted Sassoon's resignation, quote, based on your choice to continue pursuing a politically motivated prosecution, despite an express instruction to dismiss the case. You lost sight of the oath that you took when you started at the Department of Justice. My God. All right, first, this prosecution was initially carried out, well, by the Justice Department under the Democratic president, Joe Biden, against a Democratic mayor. So that hardly seems politically motivated. In fact, the U.S. attorney at the time that the charges were brought, who was appointed by Joe Biden, was a Democrat. Secondly, Sassoon herself is not a Democrat. She clerked for Justice Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court, and she's a member of the far-right Federalist Society, the supposedly conservative legal organization. So is Trump's personal lawyer, who's been tapped as acting deputy attorney general, Beauvais, ordered by the president of the United States to drop a case in which everyone believes the Democratic mayor has been caught dead to rights, that is somehow an indictment by a democratically run DOJ now defended by a far-right Republican prosecutor? Somehow that's a politically motivated prosecution? Really? I'm not sure how much more twisted this could actually be.
Well, it's Orwellian, and it is by design.
It's absolutely insane. And of course, it reminds us of the Saturday Night Massacre when Nixon tried to fire the special counsel that was investigating him, and he couldn't find anybody at DOJ to do it because the attorney general refused, and the next person who took his place refused, and then the next person, I think it was the third person, finally agreed to fire the special counsel. That person, Robert Bork, would eventually go on to be nominated to the Supreme Court.
And denied.
Denied that.
For very good reason.
Right. But this is just absolutely twisted. The Southern District has long been viewed as the nation's most prestigious U.S. attorney's office, the Times notes, has a reputation for guarding its independence, fending off interference from Washington, winning it the nickname the Sovereign District. Ms. Sassoon notified her office of her decision to resign on Thursday in a brief email shortly before 2 p.m. The office has still, at least as of airtime, not filed a motion to dismiss that case against New York City Mayor Eric Adams. At least at this hour, it's not immediately clear who would replace her. Typically, it would be the office's number two official, the deputy U.S. attorney at SDNY. That's a role that's currently held by someone named Matthew Podolsky. We will see how long he lasts in that role at this point. I suspect there will be more to this story over the next 24 hours and beyond. But wow, and I was going to say that's sort of where the story is now. But even as I was talking about it here, breaking news again from the New York Times, Mayor Eric Adams of New York City said that he would allow immigration agents into the Rikers Jail complex, a shift in the city's sanctuary policies, which had previously prevented federal officials from coming into jails to do their
dirty work,
their immigration work. That's right. So there's Eric Adams earning his pay, apparently, and trying to let the Trump administration know, hey, I'm still on your side, still need you to keep trying to drop those charges against me, pretty please.
Please keep up your end of the bargain.
Unbelievable. That story, as I said, will continue, but that's where we are now. Okay, quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and the green or red, white, and blue news report. Straight ahead on the broadcast, I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
All right, Desi Doyen, if not for that story, remarkable story out of New York breaking late on Thursday, I'd hope to get to a story about what's going on at NOAA and the National Weather Service.
Yes, it's bad.
And these seemingly random layoffs of people kind of all across those across that agency.
Demolition derby of agencies.
And this happens right in the middle of what is essentially two huge winter storms on the West Coast and on the East Coast. I can speak to the one out here in Los Angeles today with tons of rain finally coming down. We could use the rain, but there's also concerns about landslides and so forth, in particularly in burn areas after the fires just a few weeks ago. And also now breaking as we go to air, apparently a huge pileup near Multnomah Falls up in Oregon, 100 cars in the westbound lanes of Interstate 84. The sheriff's office is said to be going car to car now. There have been reports of injuries. So far, no deaths reported, but that breaking storm, that breaking weather amid this winter storm.
Stay safe
along
out there,
the West
folks.
Coast. Yep,
be very careful. Don't go out if you don't have to.
And appreciate the National Weather Service while we still have it. And
yes.
Now it's our latest green news report.
The value of U.S. real estate could be reduced by $1.4 trillion due to unaccounted for climate risk.
Climate change is reshaping America's real estate markets. Trump administration hiring freeze halts hiring of seasonal firefighters.
Brilliant.
Plus,
he's going to make showers great again.
Here we go again. Trump rolls back water and energy efficiency appliance standards that save you money.
Haven't we been here before?
Yes.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
These are screenshots of contracts that Doge found across our government. I love this one. $57,000 for climate change in Sri Lanka. What is this doing to continue the interests of the American people?
I don't know, White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt. Why don't you ask me after sea level rise overtakes the island and their 23 million climate refugees want to move here? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, by the way, that was Carolyn Leavitt responding to a reporter who asked about the fraud that Donald Trump and Elon Musk and Doge are claiming to find. Not just contracts that they don't like.
Doesn't work like that.
Apparently it does now. What do you got for us today?
Well, first, good news and bad in Southern California. Good that delayed seasonal rains have finally arrived and the deadly Los Angeles area fires are out, but the risks of mudslides in burn areas remains, with damage and economic losses from the fires estimated at more than $250 billion. Insurance giant State Farm has petitioned state regulators to approve an emergency rate hike of at least 20% on homeowner policies across the entire state to offset their losses. The rapid increase in costly, climate-intensified extreme weather disasters has triggered an insurance crisis, pushing companies like State Farm to reduce or cancel their residential property insurance coverage in California and Texas. Most have already left Florida. A new rapid attribution study concluded that human-caused climate change made the Los Angeles fires 35% more likely and more intense than would have occurred during the pre-industrial era. The study also confirmed that Southern California's fire season, with the most flammable drought conditions, now lasts about a month longer than in the past.
Seems to me like it lasts all year long at this point.
Yep. A disturbing new study warns that the impacts of man-made climate change could bring sweeping changes in U.S. real estate values over the next 30 years. According to nonprofit risk modeler First Street, climate change could wipe out nearly $1.5 trillion in home values over the next 30 years.
$1.5 trillion.
Due to unaccounted for climate risk. The researchers note that Americans are beginning to migrate out of vulnerable areas with soaring insurance costs. They warn that the trend will likely increase as trillions of dollars worth of property becomes uninsurable. That, they warn, could create a downward spiral as people leave and home values decline. In a Senate hearing this week, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell noted how climate can destabilize real estate markets.
Both banks and insurance companies are pulling out of areas. You know, if you fast forward 10 or 15 years, there are going to be regions of the country where you can't get a mortgage. There won't, you know, the banks won't have branches and things like that. It certainly will have significant economic consequences.
Oh, now we're supposed to listen to that lefty Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chair, appointed by, checks notes, Donald Trump.
And it also doesn't bode well that the Trump administration's hiring freeze has halted hiring for wildland firefighting, and those jobs are going unfilled.
Insane.
The freeze comes at a critical time when fire departments across the country would typically be onboarding more than 10,000 seasonal federal firefighters in preparation for wildfires over the spring and summer months, creating a potential shortfall of firefighters before the season gets gets underway in earnest.
Well, we'll just blame Joe Biden.
And finally, Donald Trump this week ordered the Environmental Protection Agency to roll back energy and water efficiency standards for light bulbs, toilets, showers, and other appliances that actually save Americans money on their household bills. Fox News host Larry Kudlow was ecstatic.
Trump washing machines will get all those stains out that you could never do with Biden's little puny water trickle.
Except Trump picked the wrong agency. The Department of Energy sets appliance efficiency standards, not EPA.
Either way, we're going to party like it's 2016. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us on the social medias, particularly Blue Sky at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
So tonight I'm gonna party like it's
2016. Yeah, indeed. By the way, do I have time for this? I think I do.
Give it a try.
This you described this. We played a piece of it there in the Green News Report.
Larry Kudlow of Fox Business, yes.
Giving what you described as
a tongue bath.
A tongue bath to Donald Trump. We could only play a part of it, but I think a little bit more of it here just before we go, because it's kind of amazing.
He's going to make showers great again. For the first time in 4 years, I could take a real shower with the water pounding down on me.
I'd like to pound down on you, Larry.
Not some puny Biden drizzle. It will be a wonderful feeling. I've missed it. And I believe millions of other people feel the same way.
What is he talking about? He's pretending that we weren't able to take real showers?
Yes. That's exactly
while Joe Biden was here?
Yes, because he's pretending that these future standards were already in place. They're not.
These future standards? These standards that Joe Biden put in place, like if you buy a new shower
in
down
2027,
the road,
yes.
Now, why do I say this?
I don't know why.
Because
do
this
you,
morning at 6:57 a.m., President Trump instructed EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin to go back to Mr. Trump's old environmental orders that were terminated by Biden on water standards and flows.
So now they're turning up the water, so we're all going to get more pressure in our shower? Is that what Larry Kudlow actually thinks is going on here?
In other words, folks, you can let the water rip, finally, after 4 years of missing it. And not just a great shower, but in the sink, too. You can really wash your face, get a better shave.
You couldn't do
wash
that?
Wash your hands as often
what
as you want
hell?
With real, strong, live water flow.
What?
Not like some third world countries I know. Or even Europe, when hardly anybody washes.
Ooh, meow.
And toilets can flush the way they're supposed to, with just a flick of the handle. Everything is solved.
He does. He knows better, right?
Yes, he does.
He doesn't know that they're actually turning up the water and that we can all shower and flush the toilet
and
really wash
that.
Our faces good again.
That's right. What he actually needs is a plumber to find out what's wrong with the water flow in his building.
That's not the only thing that Larry Kudlow needs, but I take your point. Anyway, he goes on and on like that with his tongue bath, but mercifully, we will put it to an end and get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com, a service made possible by you. Yes, you, at least those of you who hit a donate button at bradblog.com or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves and counter jackasses like Larry Kudlow. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and other social media, specifically Blue Sky. You will find me at the Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman, and I mean it. Good luck, world.